This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Welcome back to the second hour of Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. And in for Mike today is June. Thank you, June. Mike is under the weather today.
My pleasure.
We are on 107.7 WTPL in the Concord, Manchester, and Lakes region. And we are also streaming live on the World Wide Web at WTPLFM.com, which is powered by the Granite State Dairy Promotion. And coming up next, we are going to be talking with Donna from Delaware. Donna is, she's been a regular segment on since we started. And I met Donna in Grand Cayman. And, you
she's
know, her,
quite a character.
She is quite the character. But, you know, she is, I knew when I met her that she was definitely a foodie. And she is such a foodie and she loves to cook. And you can certainly tell that. So welcome on, Donna, to Food for Thought. How are you?
How's everything going in New Hampshire?
It's going good. How about you down in Delaware?
Well, I'm just recovering from a ham coma. My mama cooked ham.
Ham coma.
Yes, a ham coma. My mama cooked ham Easter.
Okay.
And normally I don't dine on swine, only occasionally.
I don't dine on swine. I don't like, you know what, Donna, I am with you. I am not a ham person.
No, I'm not either. I only eat ham once a year, and my mama cooks it. So I've been in a ham coma. I've been eating ham every single day since Sunday. So I'm just waking up from this ham coma. You know, I had too much pork on my fork, you know. Whoa. You know, just a little bit too much.
Okay, now hold on. You said mom cooked the ham. So what? Did you get the leftovers or did mom cook the ham at your house? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, I went over to her house and so she cooked it. So she, because my husband don't eat pork, so I can't cook pork in my house, you know. So I had pork over her house. So she cooked a spiral ham and she put something on that ham. You hear me? Oh, it was, I had to bring some home. I had like a pound of ham.
Oh, jeez.
Yes. What do you do for leftovers with it?
What do I do for leftovers?
What do you make with it?
What I make with it, it's just so good eating it just by itself. So I only put some butter and some bread on it and go to work with it.
Oh, jeez.
That's it. You know, I've been eating it every single morning for breakfast.
Oh, my gosh.
It's sad, but yes, that's why I got to get back to focus, back to things I need to do. We're working out and keeping my nutrition up because I only eat ham once a year, but the ham coma has got to cease.
There you go. So is ham out of the house now? Are you finished the ham?
Ham is definitely out of the house. Okay. You know, I had to get the ham out of the house. And but I wanted to tell you that I had my sister-in-law come.
Okay.
Now,
is that a good thing or a bad thing?
In-laws or outlaws? That's what you can have.
Got to be careful.
Yes. In-laws or outlaws. I had her come like maybe it's been about 2 weeks since she came. So having a new sister-in-law is like having a new pair of shoes. You got to break them in. When it comes down to your kitchen. You hear me?
Yes, I do. So, I understand.
Yes, you got to fully understand that. So I had her come over because, you know, I'm the hostess with the mostest. So I invite her down. So since we didn't start off so right, because we was like oil and vinegar, we just didn't mix. So I said, maybe if we spend some quality time in the kitchen, we could get to know each other a little better. You feel me?
I feel you.
So I invited her down for some one-on-one time. Now, this was on a Friday night, y'all. So I said, we're going to have crab cakes for dinner. And she was like, okay, I never had crab cakes. And so it was interesting. So I was like, you know what? I got to work on my people skills in the kitchen and my cooking skills. So I said, first thing you're going to do in the kitchen is 101. You're going to wash your hands. So we got all scrubbed up. And so I handed her a whole pound of lump crab meat. And she placed it in a bowl. I gave her one tablespoon of Old Bay seasoning and one teaspoon of dry dill. We used two tablespoons of lemon juice, and I used a quarter teaspoon of Spanish paprika, because y'all know I like it spicy, and I used a quarter teaspoon of dry mustard. I told her to mix all that together until I got the rest of the ingredients together. Now, this is where it went way wrong. This chick, okay, she started mixing the food, and then she started eating over top of my bowl.
Ooh. Oh, not good.
Yeah, that's not good.
I had to check her. You hear me? I told her, no, back up from my bowl. You hear me? So she looked at me like I told her to jump off of a bridge, and I wish I did tell her to jump off a bridge. You hear me? Because there's three things you don't mess with in my house, all right?
Your food.
You don't mess with my man. You don't mess with my money, and you definitely don't mess with my food. You hear me?
We so, hear you.
So she turned to me, y'all, like I was saying something, I turned to her, and she looked at me like she was a little chick from the Exorcist, because she gave me like a real little dirty look. And so I kindly moved her out of the way, and I proceeded to make this crab cake myself. I used a quarter cup of Miracle Whip salad dressing. I used one egg, and then I used a half a cup of Italian seasoned breadcrumbs. I mixed them well, and I did let her form the patties, and then I placed them into the freezer so they could set. So I got it. So as I placed them into the freezer, I said, "Let me try to get to know her just a little bit better." So she proceeded to tell me about her life, and she told me that. She was in it when her girlfriend comes over to her house. She always asks her, "Can she drink out of this container? You know, like pour her some juice because she says that she drinks out her containers at home." You hear me? I looked at her. I said, "That was the first and the last time I'm going to eat anything in your kitchen." You hear me? She wasn't eating nothing else out of my kitchen. Because after she told me that, I was like, I was so disgusted. I said, by the time it was time for us to fry these crab cakes, normally I go a little health conscious. I use a little olive oil or I use coconut oil, but this time I had to kill the germ, y'all. I had to use vegetable oil on high, and I even waited until she got in the shower so I didn't want her to touch my crab cakes so that I made them myself. So that was my crab cake experience.
Yikes.
I called it AKA Krabby Patty.
Oh, my goodness. Now, did you discuss this with Ted at all?
Yeah. You know, I told him, and, you know, Ted didn't eat none of it. You hear me?
He
ate none of it. We made seven crab cakes. And so Ted went to, him and his brothers went out. So it was just me and her in the house. So, and she's greedy. She ate like three. I was like, this chick is greedy. So I was like, you need to save some. Her husband ate some because I guess they used to eating like that. I ain't used to eating like that. So Teddy didn't eat any, you know. He was like, he don't play that. He even likes some open-air kitchens. Have y'all ever been to one of those restaurants with open-air
kitchens? Yes, I love those.
I prefer those because at least you can see what people doing in that kitchen.
This is true.
You know?
This is true.
Because that freaks me out. You do something dirty in the kitchen, that's it. I will not eat. Stick a fork in me. I'm done. You hear me?
We have Chef Patrick here. He's sitting in, and he can hear you. Do you have any questions for Chef Patrick?
Yeah. So what is your sanitation purposes in the kitchen?
my purposes in the kitchen is always sanitation, but you know, I agree with you 100%. You don't double dip with a spoon when you're tasting or a fork. You don't eat over the bowl. You know, you always wash your hands and you always clean your area frequently. You know, like I tell my students, I say, you know, you wash your hands constantly all the time.
Because people watching you. If you watch somebody do something dirty in the kitchen, would you eat off them?
No, not at all. I'm a phobic. So it's you know, I'm completely crazy. I wouldn't even drink out of a glass if someone took a sip out of my bottle.
Yeah, me neither.
Or
I don't play that. Oh, you don't know what people got.
Unless it's my wife.
That's right.
You know? Yep. So, but it's crazy. I agree with
you.
So,
like, your chopping purposes, like, far as when you're in the kitchen, your utensils, you make sure, like, you sterilize, you know, yeah.
Yeah,
when
you're in the kitchen, we in the restaurant industry, we use sanitizer buckets. So we have buckets of sanitizer.
Oh, where you get that liquid at?
It's regular sanitizer. You can find it in we have it at the restaurant. It's kind of like it's a multi-quart sanitizer. It's pink, so it's different than water. But you put it in there, and it's able so you can keep a clean towel all the way. So when you take your knife out of the sanitizer, you're constantly wiping it down, and it's clean. And then you start chopping, and then you can have another one with a towel, so you can clean your surface frequently, and you always stay clean that way. And then obviously wear gloves, and always change your gloves, wash your hands, and it's a process. And we teach our students the process. You know, so.
I definitely needed a clean knife that day because I wanted to chop her head clean, smooth off.
It would have been clean.
You know, Donna, maybe you should have started with a glass of wine and it would have kept things a little mellower.
No, I don't need no drunks in my kitchen.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No way. You hear me? That would even be worse. Somebody gets drunk, they get sloppy. You hear me?
I hear you.
You got to be sober when you messing with my food. You hear me? You got to be sober when you messing with money, and you definitely got to be sober when you messing with my man.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, Donna.
So, Donna, are you and Ted going to be heading to Grand Cayman again over Christmas?
No. This time, we're thinking about going to Hawaii. I need a lay. La, la, la. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Very nice. Well, Daryl and I are going back to Grand Cayman, so.
You are for Christmas?
We are.
Oh, that is so sweet. I don't think I want no turtle this time. I think I want to try that. I want to roast a pig this time for Christmas.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, because you know they do the luau's.
Yes, they do. And it's fun. Very fun.
Yep.
Can you see me out there shaking it? Mm-hmm. I'm going to get the limbo. How low can I go? Yeah, I'm going to go low.
I can see you doing the limbo there, Donna. Well, okay. We are going to let you go. We need to go to break.
Well, I got to go anyway because I got to go back to my ham coma, you know.
Okay. You go back to that, and I will. We will await the next week's adventure.
Okay. Well, remember, life is for living and food is for giving. And Donna's out of here.
Bye. Donna. Oh, my gosh. Is she a hoot or what?
Yes, she is.
Ooh,
I bet she's
not even sure what to say right now.
Yeah, she's a lively one, and she doesn't even drink.
No, she doesn't.
Oh,
wow. All right, you are listening to Food for Thought, 107.7 WTPL FM, and we are live at the Beacon Building in downtown Manchester, right at 814 Elm Street. We'd also love for you to check us out on Facebook. You can go to Food for Thought and like us, and we have some trivia questions going on there, so you can win some packages. And we have in-house right now, I'll introduce him right now because we still have a couple more minutes. Chef Patrick is back.
Oh, thank you
we
very much
missed
for
you
having
in
me.
Studio last week, but
I
you
know.
Did call in,
yes,
and
that
was great.
Yeah, that's great. Like I said, I appreciate you having me back. It's excellent, and I love coming out here and doing this. So.
Yes, it's very fun. Yeah. And Chef Patrick is the culinary director of Lakes Region Community College at Shaker Village. And he brought some soups today with him.
And
so we're going to talk soups and chowder and some grilling. And we are going to go on a short break. And Food for Thought will be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. And in for Mike today is June. And you are listening to 107.7 WTPL, streaming live on the World Wide Web at WTPLFM.com. And you can give us a call at any time as well. The number is 866-823-1077. Chef Patrick is in the house. So if anybody has any chef questions, cooking questions, you should see the soups that he brought in here.
They smell amazing. Well,
thank
they
you very much.
They do. And, you know, do you know that my favorite soup of all time, do you know what it is? Have you heard me talk about
it? No, not at all.
Tomato soup.
Tomato soup.
Mine
all right.
too.
Oh,
that
I
is
love
has, that has to be one of my. To be, you know, the funny thing about soups is because the why I love to make them so much is it's one of the comfort foods.
Yes, it totally
it goes
is.
Goes right up there with shepherd's pie, macaroni and cheese, and tomato soup with grilled cheese. Oh, you
it's
can't.
You can't go wrong
no,
with that. You
no.
absolutely cannot go wrong.
Absolutely.
And
do you know what? Every time I try to make tomato soup, I curdle it.
You curdle it.
You
I do.
Do.
I don't know why.
Is that by adding cream to it or anything?
Yeah, and you know what? I add the I add the non-fat, low-fat Cream.
Okay. Okay.
And it's still curdled.
You know, what you have to do?
What?
Is anytime you add a cream or milk or dairy to a soup, you need to thicken it a little bit. Okay. And so that's what part of the soup making process that I do and I teach my students, because it has, you know, what happens sometimes when you, when you're making soup, depending on what you put in it, there's going to be some sort of acidity, especially
right.
with the vegetables.
Yep.
I put wine in mine.
Yep.
And I also, you know, like it's put different ingredients in it. And especially with tomato soup, it's got that acidity. It will break down that cream. So a little bit of thickener holds it together. And then you add cheese. If you add a cheese to a soup, say you're making like a cheddar soup, you ever notice sometimes it gets stringy and it kind of disintegrates?
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
If you thicken it first and then fold in your cheese and your cream, you'll be all set.
Oh, I love little tips.
Yeah.
All I have to do is remember it.
Now people always, too, and when they're making soups, and you know, you can either you just make a broth soup and reduce it down, and that will thicken it. But at the same time, a lot of people will use roux and will use whitewashes, and then there's cornstarch slurry, and they all have different purposes. You know, like I said, a lot of people use it too much. You know, you'll see a lot of recipes, and a lot of recipes call for making a roux in a soup,
right.
And then, you know, sautéing your vegetables, adding your butter, you know, in there, and your flour, and they put it in the bottom of the pan, and then put the stocks. Well, sometimes the recipes aren't right. So what happens is you've added too much roux, and your soup's too thick. Well, you know, I always teach my students, I said, you can always
add
roux to a soup.
You
can't take it out. Make it separately, slowly add it in until it gets that viscosity and consistency that you want, and it comes out correctly. So.
Now, can you keep roux in the fridge?
You could keep roux in the fridge, yeah. What I use a lot is what's called a slurry, a slurry or a whitewash. Have you ever heard of a whitewash before?
No,
whitewash is, it's just like a slurry. It's flour and water.
Okay.
So you take it and you either mix it or you whisk it so there's no lumps in it.
Right.
And that's quick, rather than having to cook the butter down and use a
even roux. Amount of each? Or?
Usually it's flour, like if you're using like 1 cup of flour to 2 cups of water. So you want to make it till it's like pancake batter consistency.
Yeah.
Maybe just a little bit under pancake batter consistency. Then you can pour it in there and you can thicken it and it comes out really just little amounts at a time. And then there's also a rule of thumb too, is when you're making chowders, and this is my rule of thumb, okay? And now I tell people this, you know, use flour, you know, for your flours or your roux for chowders and things that are cream-based
okay.
or gravies.
Right.
If you use cornstarch or you use tapioca or one of those thickening agents, it's going to come out looking like Chinese food. If you ever had Chinese food, that opaque kind of, you know, translucent. And it doesn't hold up as well. Yeah. So, yeah, those
now,
are little tricks of the trade.
Is it true that, okay, let's say when you're doing the whitewash,
mm-hmm.
flour and water,
yep.
and you said you whisk it to get the lumps out,
yep.
you want to get all those lumps out, right? Because is it true that if you don't get all those lumps out and you put it into your soup will be lumpy?
Yeah, you'll just have dumplings. Mm-hmm. Your dumplings. And what happens, too, is with roux, if you're making a roux separately and you don't cool it and you're adding hot roux to hot stock, it'll make those dumplings, they call them roux balls, that make dumplings instantly. And it'll just, you know, you'll have a lumpy soup.
Huh.
Now, obviously, if you're doing a sauce, you can always strain those and get those out of there.
Right.
But with a soup, when you have all the sorts of ingredients inside of it, you want to make sure that you whisk it in a metal bowl. And I usually sift the flour, mix it, and then it comes out fine.
Okay.
You know, so even if there's like little minute, you won't be able to tell. You know, you just don't want big dumplings
right.
inside your dish.
Okay, now, and when you talk about a roux is flour and butter.
Flour and butter, okay. And so now you start talking about roux. There's three different types of roux. There's a blonde roux, there's a brown roux, and a dark roux. So you'll use different roux for different things, like if you're using Cajun Creole cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And we made like a gumbo.
Okay.
And that dark roux, they literally roast it till it's like the color, you know, of dark brown. Kind of.
Okay, wait. You're roasting what though?
The roux.
Flour.
So you start to cook down the butter. Okay. And what you do first is you want to clarify that butter, because butter has milk solids inside
and
of it.
And what does that mean when you
now,
clarify?
When you clarify, you put it. Say we took a pound of butter, we put it in a saucepan.
Right.
I would bring that to a small. You know, just bring it till it melts it, and it'll start to simmer just barely. You don't want it too hot, and you'll just keep skimming those impurities off the top, the milk solids, and put them aside. And eventually, what you'll have is you'll have an oil with butter. lighter flavor to it that you can cook and saute with high heat rather than it burning, because those milk salts will burn, and that's what happens a lot of times. So you start with that, then you add your flour to it, and then you want to cook it. So when you add your roux, once again, it should be like pancake batter consistency, kind of like wet sand. And yeah, you cook that. So you want to roast it. You want to get those nutty, you know, flavors out of the flour, so you can smell them, and that's going to add flavor to your sauces or soups.
So does it turn it brown? I mean, will it?
So when you're doing like a brown roux, you can keep cooking it, or you can put it in the oven and mix it until it turns brown, and that'll add more flavor. So if you're using like stews or something that you want to add a little bit more flavor to, you can do that. But at the same time with Cajun Creole, that dark, like mud consistency of flour, they literally, that's what gives that flavor to a good like.
I never knew that.
So for stews and stuff, that's actually what you would want to use the darkened one.
A darkened one, yeah, it could add flavor, but it just adds, you know, like I said, there's no rules in cooking. And that's the best thing about, you know, making these soups and when you're tasting these soups and everything.
It's very good.
Well, thank you.
I have
thank
the you. Tomato, and it's delicious.
And, I added a little touch of cream to this, but you don't have to. You can take this soup, and I know you ladies are on diet, so I feel bad. I bought all this cream. I've been on a diet for years, and I'm fine. but it's, no, I've been eating this for years, and I'm fine. But, no, I finished with a little cream because, you know, a lot of my cooking background's, you know, classical French, but at the same time, when you start talking about these soups, if you were to make this tomato soup and didn't put, you know, you didn't thicken it and just left it as a pureed soup, because so there's different, if you, you know, study up, there's different classifications of soups. So if you just left this as a pureed soup, add a little, you know, chicken broth or vegetable broth if you're a vegetarian, and left it and seasoned it with some rich flavors like roasted garlic and your herbs and everything like that, and use it so you can drink, that comes out great too. And one of the other tricks I do with tomato soup is you'll notice a little sweetness to it.
There is a little sweetness to here.
Yeah.
My mom used to do that.
Yeah, because it cuts the acidity.
Right.
Wait a minute, you said sugar.
Sugar. Yeah. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
It cuts the acidity down a little bit, and it makes it more palatable, I guess.
Right.
It's very, very good.
It's delicious.
That's good. And so there's a basis. And, you know, we start talking about some of these things and, you know, basis of making soups. And when I teach the students, you know, if we start off with what's called a basic mirepoix, which is, I remember we talked 1 week.
Yeah.
And the onion, celery, and carrots.
Right.
Cajun Creole cooking, it's called a trinity. So it's onions, celery, and peppers. Okay.
Okay.
And so there's
that's a
bases.
Trinity.
A trinity, trinity, yes. Yep. So you start off with your basic mirepoix for most stews. For your chowders, obviously, you're going to be making chowder. You want to leave something out because it's traditionally, you know, white. So you're going to leave carrots out. So you start off with the basic.
Okay.
But always at least onion, I say. Onion and garlic.
Yeah, you must always have to have onion and garlic. Oh, yeah. I agree. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So so you start off with the base of that. I always put wine in everything.
It gives it another layer of flavor. It really does.
Well, and it reduces down a lot of wines, but a lot of some people are like, well, I tried putting wine in my food and like you said, and it just didn't taste like yours did. So what'd you use for wine? Well, I use Chablis.
No.
That's like a sweet wine.
Are you gonna drink that?
Yeah.
Only use what you're gonna drink.
Chardonnay or Sauternes. Yeah. One of those wines that are more lemony.
Pinot Grigio works good in there.
It works good, you know, but you know, it's getting, like I said, that's borderline. I wouldn't go any sweeter than that.
Yeah.
You're using like a dessert sauce or a dessert soup or anything like that. So, so you start with your basis. I add wine. So
now when do you add your wine, like after your Trinity or Mirepoix?
Yeah. Once you start sweating those down, sometimes I like to caramelize them a little bit, but usually I sweat them. Then you add your garlic last just for a couple minutes.
You add your garlic last.
Yeah.
Once you start sweating up your Mirepoix or your Trinity, and then what happens is you sweat those down till the onions become translucent, like opaque almost.
Yep.
And then you add your garlic, you kind of mix that up, and then add your wine.
See, and this is what I was talking before when I do my cooking. I just throw everything in.
Well, and that's, you know, I heard you saying that when I was driving down here. So as I drive down here, I listen, obviously, so I want to get caught up so I'm not behind. And I almost called in because I heard a couple things with your cutting board, and I heard you with the Cutco knives, and, you know, I wanted to sound off on them. But it was one of the things, too, is that you were saying that you would just throw everything in with your husband takes time. And that's
boyfriend.
The difference. And that's the difference between, you know, like with cooking, when you do things properly, you know, or take the time to do it, you know what I'm saying? It comes out differently. And people always ask, you know.
It definitely does.
And it's, you know, I say that in the restaurant industry, too. People are like, oh, you know, they're their saute dishes are so much better and this and that. And you know, well, if you do them properly, right. You know, saute is high heat, small amount of fat. It literally means in French to jump. It doesn't mean jump in front of the pan. You're going to get that pan nice and hot so that when you put your ingredients inside that pan, it they jump around.
Like, yeah.
But all sorts of chemical some reactions take place. And sugars release, and those sugars come out, and it caramelizes. Then you deglaze, and there's another cooking term where you deglaze with the bottom pan with wine, and then you reduce, and that makes smaller. So,
amazing.
Every little step.
We could go on and on with you forever. I mean,
you pinned it exactly, and that's what I say. The difference between Daryl cooking and my cooking, he does it the right way.
Oh yeah,
I cannot do it the right way.
Yeah. And sometimes, too, like, you know, you'll find out that there is certain soups that's the flavor compound you want is just to put it in there and let it steep so that they come out differently. You're not going to get that caramelization, but you're going to release those flavors differently inside those soups.
Yep.
So, but once you learn how to make the basic of a soup, that's why I love making soups. You can make any soup.
Right.
So you start off with the same basis. Let's say this tomato soup. I started off, I didn't want to put celery in there, so it was just onions, and it was just garlic, and I sweated them down. I added my wine. So for making
there's no bacon or meat in here?
No, except for chicken stock.
It almost tasted like a little bit of bacon.
Oh, you know, that would be good too, but I added chicken stock is what I added to it.
That's very good.
It's really good.
And then, like I said, I added my sugar and onion and garlic and all that sort of sweated it down. And then, it depends how fine you can puree it up or whatever like that. But so let's say we wanted to make, a carrot soup. So how would you do it? And I was telling my students, I look at them, how would you make a carrot soup? Well, I don't know, chef. I said, well, I just made a tomato soup. So how would you make a carrot soup? Well, I just put carrots instead of tomatoes. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. There you go. You know, and if you want to make it vegetarian.
Start with your mirepoix.
Yeah. Mirepoix. And then, or in your mirepoix, like I said, differs. If you're making a chowder, I'll leave the carrots out. Some people like to leave the carrots in their chowder. That's okay, too.
Okay.
So, but I just
use
onions and celery.
You know what I like to do in my chowder? I like using red pepper.
Red pepper, yeah.
And with my onions and my garlic. And
some people use a different, once you try this chowder, they use different potatoes, okay? And I use my waxy potatoes for these, like we were talking about last week. My waxy potatoes hold together better, and you're going to notice, because I use two, and I know people can't see this, but I have two things. I have a corn chowder here, and I have a beef stew, and I use two different types of potatoes. I use those small creamer new potatoes that Una was talking about last week.
I do too.
And these are multicolored, so you'll notice there's going to be purple ones in there and all sorts of stuff.
Yep.
And this one I used my regular chef potatoes, those russets, okay? And you'll notice that the potatoes kind of fall apart a little bit, so...
In the stew.
And here you're going to notice they're going to be nice and whole. And I left the skins on because I always like the color of them.
Right.
So if you learned how to make the basic of any soup, chowder, using the same ingredients, you can vary it a little bit, So if you're making a tomato soup, make a carrot soup. You can make a spinach soup. You can make an artichoke soup.
Carrots and parsnip I hear is really
parsnip
good.
Parsnip is excellent.
Yeah. With the carrot.
I like parsnip.
Yep.
That's like kind of a new yep. I love to roast it, too.
Yeah.
It's
one of,
really,
one of
really
the things
good.
I used to be is a associate at one of our restaurants, one of these French restaurants. So each position they would have, and I'd come in the morning, I'd do the breads, and I'd also make the sauces, too. And one of the things that we would do is with parsnip, that came out excellent, was make a parsnip puree for the plates.
Oh,
and
nice.
And it would go really well with fish, but you can also infuse, simmer down like a fresh stock, cook down the parsnip, puree it, and then we add vanilla bean to it.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? And you'd use that with fish?
Well, you can use it with different things. I forget. I think we use those with scallops.
Oh.
Yeah, so.
Amazing.
Yeah, so we also used to do that with, make sauce with like a corn and bacon puree with scallops.
Ooh.
Yep.
Oh my.
Okay, now just one thing, because we need to go on a break.
Yeah.
Now, when you do like your tomato soup or your carrot soup Now, what kind of, did you use fresh tomatoes for this tomato soup?
Yes, what I did is I boiled them, and I scored them, and I took the core out of them, and you drop them in hot water for maybe a minute. Take them out, and then you peel them.
Peel them, okay.
Peel them, yep. And then we do what's called concasse, so you cut them up, and then you just do a rough chop on them. And I cut them in half and take the seeds out, because I'm not a big seed person. I don't like raw tomatoes. That's weird, isn't that weird?
No.
But I will eat tomato sauce and stewed tomatoes all day long.
Oh, but you won't eat a nice, fresh, ripe, vine tomato?
No, my mother
tomato.
Used to go out into our garden, pick a tomato, and she just had a salt shaker, and that would be it.
My dad, too.
Oh, like crazy, and, yep. I couldn't stand it because I don't like the mouthfeel of the seeds coming out. So, you know, I'll try to squeeze those out and use just the basic meat of it.
So you don't process them. You just
that's it.
I chop them.
I do afterwards, and I rough chop them, and then I'll simmer that stock down so it brings all, you know, your chicken stock and all that. So I use chicken stock in this one.
Okay.
But you can use vegetable stock. And simmer it down to all the flavors come out of the spices and things like that. And then what I'll do is I have my little
immersion.
That's the one thing that you said that you can't live without in the kitchen.
Exactly.
Well, immersion blender and my French knife too. So
there you go.
Yep, French knife. So, yep. So it's
very good.
Little tricks
of the corn chowder is absolutely
delicious.
We're
going on a break, and I'm going to get some corn chowder.
Yep.
And you are listening to Food for Thought, and we are in studio with Chef Patrick, the culinary director of Lakes Region Community College, and we're getting our weekly cooking lesson. That was, like, so interesting with soups.
Yep.
And next, I think we'll talk a little bit of grilling and maybe a little bit more soup, too. I have a couple more questions. So stay tuned. Food for Thought will be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Mike, and in for Mike today is June. Mike is a little under the weather. He's going to take tomorrow off too, so he's going to be brand new on Friday.
Too bad, Mike. You're missing some delicious food.
Well, his favorite thing too is soup, as is mine. So yes, he's going to be extremely jealous.
Yeah,
I may need to have to save him some.
Yeah, take one of these containers and freeze it.
I know.
Be all right.
Oh my gosh, delicious. Okay, we are in studio.
Don't you love
Sorry,
it live?
I like to play the music a lot longer than normal.
But what's up?
Okay, and well, you know what? Bob just let me know that the Boston Marathon bombing trial verdict is coming now. And just so that the listeners know, we will have the latest at 2 o'clock with the news and also on Ken's show. So that's, I guess, happening as we speak right now.
Awesome.
So people that are listening and want to be able to tune in. So that'll be coming up. But, you know, Patrick, these soups aren't they delicious?
They are awesome. And this beef stew is so good. The meat is not chewy, not tough. It's delicious.
And a lot of times, too. So now you start talking about chowders as opposed to soups, and then you start talking. Obviously, there's different variations. And when you go to culinary school, you start learning. There's pureed soups, there's chowders, there's stews. And, you know, stews are very much just like braised dishes. You have to brown the meat. I know before you said you love to sear. You know, you're talking off air, but you love to sear. And so that's the key to, like, a good stew. You get that meat. Choose the meat first.
Right.
Okay.
Now, what kind of meat did you put in here?
This one is more of like it's like a sirloin tip is what I used.
Okay? That's very good.
And it's what I had today. A lot of people buy that the chuck, and it's just like and I talk, and we're going to talk about grilling pretty soon. You said too that you want to talk about. So here's a little rule of thumb. When you start talking about meats, you take a look at the cuts of meats, and I always go to the grocery store because I'm always on the run, and my chef jacket on there, and I go into to Market Basket or one of the places, and I'm sitting there, and they're like, oh, can you show me where the beets are today?
My gosh!
I always forget to take it off, but then the other thing they're asking me is cooking questions, and I'll see people just baffled at looking at meats of what they're going to use for grilling,
right?
And so, you know, normally you want to start with what cut of meat first, you know, like my favorite's like a New York sirloin.
Because of the marbling in it?
Exactly.
Okay.
Because of the marbling and the fat content. So, you know, if you're buying a steak and you want to take a look at that steak, and if, you know, I see people grab the package of meat and they're looking at it and they're like, oh, this is a nice lean cut of meat. I'm going to get this one.
I'm like,
you want the fat embedded in it.
Right.
Because the fat has flavor, but it also breaks apart the muscle fibers, which makes it more tender. Okay. So those thick cuts, those lean cuts of steak or beef or whatever, you want to use for stewing. Because there's a couple of things that happen when you're doing the cooking process. Number one, when you use stews, I use tomato paste in here. I use the beef broth, but I also use red wine. I use wine in everything I do. Like, students make fun of me.
They don't
kind of like
me
Julia Child,
yeah.
For you or me.
Me.
So, I always use a lot of wine because wine cooks down. It gets fortified. Mm-hmm. So when you're tasting that beef stew, what you're tasting is I have burgundy wine that's inside there.
It is a nice, rich, delicious flavor.
It is.
It really
is. Awesome.
Rule of thumb is using red wines with meats. Mm-hmm. And if you're using something light like chowder, you use a white wine.
White wine.
So it cooks it down. But you take those thicker, non-fatty cuts of meat and you stew them, because over the cooking process of it cooking, when you do a stew, you want to cook it for a while. Mm-hmm. Cook it for a long time. You know, a lot of people put them in crock pots and let them stew, but the combination of the acidity and the heat transfer and that cooking technique will break down those meat fibers and make that more tender. So that's why you want to use those more thick cuts of meat for stews.
The thick cuts without the marbling.
Without the marbling. Right. Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
No. I just want to, I think you did say it, but I just want to clarify it.
And also, too, the size of the meat that you're cutting. And you notice, I always teach the students, too, what you're eating is very easy to eat with a spoon.
Right, it is.
You know, you go to some places that have hunks of meat like this, and you can't.
And you have to sit there and on your spoon, you got one bite in, and
or
you're like,
you try to.
And the reason why we practice knife cuts, like I told you before, and, you know, uniformity of the food inside there is because it cooks evenly. So same thing with meats and your vegetables. They're that size for a reason, because number one, they fit on a spoon. It makes it easier for your guests to eat.
Right.
But at the same time, they cook evenly. So you know, once everything's done, it's going to be done at the same time. It's not like I have one big hunk of potato and one small one. Well, the small one's going to be disintegrated, while the big one's not even.
You want to kind of make them a little uniform, and just keep in mind that people, you know, it is
same
a super
thing with salads
stew.
Too.
Right.
You know, so
but when
you
I'm go a back, big one with salads.
Salads, yeah.
I hate
nothing like having a big piece of lettuce that's like this.
No,
and you're
no,
trying
that's
to
why I like
it.
Chopped salads.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
I love chopped salads.
Whenever I make a salad, I keep it all small.
Yep.
I just love it that way.
Yeah. Yep. Myself too. So, that's like the basic rule of thumbs for soups and chowders. Keep them small, but build the flavors inside them. Start off with the sweating technique. So this has all your mirepoix. It's got onion, celery, and carrots. Then I add my garlic. And then I add my
translucent
burgundy
wine. First.
Yep.
Then your garlic.
I'm sorry. Let me take that back. I brown my meat first. Mm. So I sear them inside the pan, and I get that nice and dark. A lot of people are like, "Why is it so dark? You know, you don't want to get no. You want to get really dark.
That up. Yeah.
And you want to get all those little bits on the bottom of the pan, because I'm going to add that red wine to it eventually, and that red wine's going to take that right off.
Yep.
It's just going to add into your sauce. So there's little transfers of caramelization, is what that's called. Caramelization inside of your product. So I'll put brown it off first. I'll add my mirepoix. That kind of deglazes the pan a little bit itself. I'll add my garlic, because you don't want to add garlic too soon because it'll burn quick.
Right.
Add my wine to it, and then add like a nice, rich, fortified stock, preferably one that you made, because when you make a stock, it's the same thing. You add onions, celery, and carrots, which is your basic mirepoix.
And what do you use, like, for a beef stock? What would be your go-to for making a beef stock?
So I would take my onions, you know, celery, and carrots, and I would take beef bones, and I would brown them. And if you want just beef stock, just regular beef stock, brown them off in the oven. Sometimes you cover them with tomato paste.
Brown the beef bones in the oven.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Make them nice
that.
And dark. Nice and dark. Because it just adds, like I said, you'll cover them. When I make a demi-glaze, I'll cover them with tomato paste. So there's different sauce making things, and I could go on forever before I start, you know, confusing everybody.
Right, we're gonna get confused. So let's just stick with the basic browning of the bone.
Browning of the bones. You put them in there with your stock. Cover it with cold water, and you slowly bring that to a simmer. And I also have what's called a sash. It's a little bag. It's a little cheesecloth.
Yeah.
Or you can use if you have coffee filters.
Yep.
You know, I save all my stems from like parsley, thyme, all that sort of stuff. Put it inside there. In the restaurant's what we do. And you take it and you just wrap it. And you'll take a little
spoon. Oh, and you just use the stems.
Yep, so you can take it
that?
Out instead of having to scoop out all the and put peppercorns in there, bay leaves, all sorts of stuff. So you start simmering that stuff. That's called a sash.
Now, wait, back up 1 second.
Yeah.
Before you go any further, why cold water? I always use hot water.
Okay. No. Now, if you use hot water, like very hot water, what it does is it's almost like it sears the bones. It doesn't – like if you add it cold, it'll slowly heat up and the everything in the bones will just kind of – slowly come out into and give you more optimal flavor, whereas it's hot, it kind of seals it up a little bit. And so you want to brown those bones first, cool them, put them in cold water, cold stock, then your sash with all your flavor, and let it reduce. You let it, you boil it, you put it on all day. If it's a big, usually do it in a big pot, but reduce down. When it gets to about quarter, fill it up again. I do that three times. And what happens is it releases all the bone marrow inside there, and it has everything.
Wow.
And so a good stock that you make should be gelatinous. It should literally look like Jell-O, because that's what Jell-O comes from, is
right.
marrow in the bones. So you make that, reduce it down to it's nice and fortified, and you use that. You can freeze your broth.
Them.
Oh, yeah. Put it right in there. Of course, you have to season it. You have to put salt and pepper to it, because it's not going to come seasoned, but it's going to have that beef flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times you'll see in restaurants, in some of the restaurants we use those pastes, or you'll see like the better broth. That's how you do it. If you made some of that, they would make these big kettles of stock, season it, but just reduce it down so far that it becomes a paste, and then they scrape that paste out.
And put it in the
container.
Amazing.
Yep, we used to do that in culinary school.
Wow.
Too, so.
See, we're getting free cooking classes.
I know. I love it.
Everybody. Love it. That's right. Everybody should cook.
Like I think said. This is, you know, I really learned a lot today.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah,
making soups and the mirepoix and the roux and the... whitewash,
slurries.
Yeah,
but then you can get in other thickening agents too. There's also the flour itself is called a thickening agent because it thickens. Anything could be a thickening agent. Not anything that has capabilities of coagulating. Blood can be a thickening agent. Arrowroot. Then you get tapioca. There's all sorts of stuff. So
see, tapioca. I think of tapioca pudding.
Yeah,
I think it's sweet.
Well, that also gives that Oriental food. Opaque, translucent.
Oh, there you go.
Well, hopefully that helped everybody.
Oh, I hope that it did, and I'm sure that it did if they were listening. Because
if there's any questions, they can always get in contact. I'll put my website or my email on the website.
We'll put it on the Facebook page, and your bio and stuff will be on the new website's coming out very, very soon. We're doing the finishing touches on it. So yes, thank you, Chef Patrick, as usual.
Come by Shaker Village too.
That's right. Exactly. Go by Shaker Village. Check out lrcc.com and find out all the hours and schedule and stuff.
Yep. And the Shaker table. Yeah.
And don't forget, listeners, the Boston Marathon bombing trial verdict is coming in now, and we're going to have the latest at 2 o'clock with the news and on Ken's show. So stay tuned. We'll see everybody tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye.